When you talk about thinking, when you mentioned about thinking, did you mean the vitakka, jhetasik, or do you mean the story?
Mainly the story, with many concepts. The question was about thinking about thinking, thinking about what is thinking, like that. So, yes, you're right. It's like, what is the story of thinking? And that's why Ajahn, I think, answered the way she did.
Ajahn, yesterday, I believe I heard you say, with regard to thinking, that thinking often arises without words.
Like now.
Can you talk more about that?
Thinking, whatever appears, something. Because that is a seeing. Seeing does not know anything at all. It just experiences whatever it's seen. But who is sitting here, see, that is thinking about the sign or nimitta. It's not just seeing.
It's just immediately, the taking something for self is immediately
for something,
thinking
for something.
Like, I look and see glass and people. Mm-hmm. That's immediately, without even thinking, glass, people, the
no,
rest of
we
it.
Don't have to name a
no,
it.
It's just, yeah. it's thinking, the immediate...
Immediate impression.
Immediate impression.
Wordless thinking.
Pardon?
Wordless.
Yes.
Thinking.
And following on a little bit from that, we were talking about, or we often talk about, detachment from the khandhas, including... or even memory. Could you say a little more about detachment from memory? And I'm also thinking about one of your comments that you've often made about delirious talking or delirious thinking, like even when we chatter about the Dharma, often it's just clinging to memory, to past discussions, past trips to India, and we think, well, this is related to the Dharma, so it's wholesome, but it's actually just delirious talking about the Dharma or non-Dharma, about family or health or these sorts of things, because of no detachment from memory. Could you say a little about this?
Can you think without memory?
No.
If you don't know that, there is no way to become detached from it.
As we know, there is memory, sanya, arising at each moment with each citta of experiencing objects through each of the doorways, including thinking, but usually we attach a lot of importance to the accumulation of memories. We find it very important, our recollections, our memories.
Without the understanding about memory, can there be direct understanding of it? So this is moments of accumulation of understanding of anything, so that there can be conditions for anything, even memory or vedana can be object of awareness.
Because we know the importance of detachment from any reality, any khanda appears, why do you stress even memory?
Everything.
Everything.
Because you are asking or talking about memory. Whatever one heard, it's like one would like to know it directly, instantly. But it's impossible.
Detachment.
It's only the development of understanding until there are moments of understanding with direct awareness.
Jonathan and Maeve, the other day in the van, did you have a discussion or any question arising about piti, joy?
I think we were talking about the rapture that accompanies what some people take to be the practice of samatha and the clinging that is likely to follow from experiencing rapture, which would be piti in terms of cittasikas, I think. But also we were discussing, I think, whether the rapture or the piti itself would be kusala or akusala.
You want to know, or just understanding that that is Dhamma?
Well, I think the ultimate is understanding that is Dhamma. But then, of course, the reason people would do it is that they think it's kusala too. So
they don't mind about understanding at all. They just want and want and want. Want to have pity, want to have joy, want to do like that. No understanding at all. But the Buddha taught dhammas for the listeners to develop understanding.
I think the conversation also touched upon how difficult it is to be detached from pleasant feeling, and particularly pleasant feeling that is of a mental kind.
Can there be any moment of detachment without understanding?
No.
So it's just wanting to have detachment, but no conditions for the detachment at all.
The conversation also arose around how the practice of samatha is so difficult because of all the imperfections, the clinging that can arise to the states that arise.
It depends on what moment of akusala can be known. Not just talk about. Just talk about doesn't bring any calm at all. But at moment of understanding the akusala moments, then can be conditions for kusala. When there's understanding of what is the right object for development of calmness. So it sounds like just wanting to know, just wanting to understand. For example, when we talk about attachment and detachment, we think that there is attachment only after one has practiced. But actually, even right now, is there no attachment? Or is there attachment? Always unknown. So the development of right understanding cannot be developed without right understanding at all. It doesn't mean that let us practice, but what about reality right now, whether it's kusala or akusala? If there is no panya, no way to develop calmness.
So what is the practice of samatha?
The practice or the development of panya by different level of understanding. For those who do not understand the development of right understanding of realities right now, they just know about the calmness, the difference between kusala and akusala. And that's the beginning of right understanding to develop calmness. Or do you mean going somewhere and practice?
No, we actually aren't interested to do that. So how is samatha developed?
Any moment of kusala more often, so the citta can be moment of samatha with what we call concentration. But actually, concentration just a sign of how much the calmness is developed. For example, now there are moments of kusala, but no sign of calmness at all. So short.
So when you say any moment of kusala, does that mean it doesn't have to be one of the so-called samatha objects?
Right understanding, tammanusati. You can recite tammanusati, puttanusati, sankhanusati. But without right understanding of Dhamma, can there be calmness? And can there be sati which knows at that moment is calm? At moment of understanding.
So that's why it's any moment of kusala
Is
calm. If there's the understanding of that calm that accompanies kusala, then that is the development of samatha.
And panya condition the development of calmness. Depending on objects too. For example, after seeing, who knows whether the citta is kusala or akusala? Without seeing, there can be moments of kusala. When there's no seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, or thinking about other things, other subjects, it can be object of calmness with right understanding. So that person has to understand what are the right objects for the development of calmness too.
aspect. As we just said, any moment of kusala can be development of calm.
So it is calm.
It is calm.
And when it arises more often, then it can be known as calm of different degrees.
And so would knowing the right objects be something that becomes relevant after there is the knowing the difference between kusala and akusala? Is it necessary at the beginning level to know the right object?
Okay, you want to be calm or you understand what calmness is?
So in a nutshell, it's understanding what calmness
Certainly.
Is rather than being calm.
When kusala citta arises and panya can see that it's not akusala, and then right understanding develops with kusala.
And in particular, we're talking about the calm that accompanies kusala. So that is a mental factor, and it's not what we think of as feeling calm, is it? The conventional idea of feeling calm is not really what we're talking about here.
Attachment or right understanding. People just want to develop calmness without right understanding.
Well, I suppose they want calmness in the sense because they think that it's samatha also.
Why do they cling to the word samatha?
Right. Instead of thinking about
realities
and kusala generally.
Just following on from that, I'm not clear about vedana. Feeling is, and I think you said about it being like a mental, the feeling of calm is in the mind, it's not in the body.
Right.
Can that condition a feeling of calm in the body, so can it condition the rupa?
I think that what do we want now? Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Mind calmness and everything.
No, just...
What about detachment?
Not so much wanting, but to be...
Wanting to know.
Yes, wanting to know, that's right. Mm-hmm. Not wanting calm, but wanting to know about calm.
Delirious.
One of the topics you were asking about, which we discussed on the first day, I think, which you may have forgotten, about wanting to know.
Wanting to know.
Thinking
yes.
It's kusala because it's dharma. Mm.
Often it's a lot of loka. I guess I don't remember that conversation very well. Wanting to know. It's the difference between wanting to know for oneself and wanting to know in order to understand. Is that?
Deliriously. When one talks about anything that one does not understand, can we say that it's delirious?
Okay, but in defense of the question that Maeve raised, the reason we are here is to clarify what we don't know or our misunderstandings. And she was raising a confusion about exactly what calm is, what vedana is, the distinction between nama and rupa in this regard when we talk about feelings and whether kusala cittas condition rupas, because often people talk about calm of the body in ignorance, not realizing that the calm is a mental state, but we know that rupas are conditioned by the mind. When the cittas are kusala, the rupas are conditioned. When someone's angry, the citta conditions the face to become red, it conditions the rupas in a particular way. So I think this is what she was asking about. So I think it's quite a good question, but of course most of the time when we talk it's delirious because we're talking in ignorance, but I still think it was a...
But now do we know precisely that calm cannot be body?
Not precisely.
Body cannot feel anything.
Oh, okay.
It can be just condition. Because citta is calm, so the body is light or something like that. Not as heavy or like a sick person.
I was going to say that the question about wanting to know, the desire to know, where there's a great desire to know, it lacks an understanding of the conditions, that when there's conditions for understanding to arise, it's going to arise.
So could we kind of conclude that it's understanding which asks the right questions, a level of understanding that asks the right questions, and if it's attachment, whatever the answers are given will not be helpful?
I think that when there is understanding of anything theoretically, shouldn't we know that it's not enough? It should be the understanding of reality now, as what we have heard. And then the question about calm and keep on going, being calm, it's not a matter of now, but it's a matter of when there is understanding more and more, and reality appears, understanding can understand that. Otherwise, it's like talking about something that's so far away, and we try to get it with our conditions. It's like asking about the nature of Nibbana or something like that. While there's no understanding of this moment.
What about if, say, a day earlier, a question arose, and then we come the next day to ask about it?
Does it help the understanding of reality?
Or keep
one away from reality?
That is what is important.
There could be the understanding that the thought arises. There are conditions for that thought to arise that, oh, I want to hear an answer to that question. So if one understands that you want to know that answer at that point, even though the question came up a day before or whatever, that there's conditions for thinking about that thing. That's just all it is.
And if it keeps on going like this, when will there be condition for direct understanding of reality right now?
I think when it comes to Vedana, for example, Maeve was asking about feelings and body and mind, I think there's often quite a lot of confusion because we read about mental and bodily feelings, but we often don't appreciate that there's the experience of tangible objects through the body sense, and that citta, that experiencing through the body sense, is accompanied by feeling, and it's called bodily feeling, but actually it's a citta-sika, it's the same vedana, just as the feeling which accompanies cheetahs which experience objects through the other doorway. So it's still all Vedana, the cheetah seeker, even though that particular Vedana is called bodily feeling. So that can cause some confusion, I think. So it helps to just know that, just to understand that feeling is always mental.
Okay, I fall and I twist my ankle and it's very painful. The pain is Jeta-sika.
So you fall and you twist your ankle, so there's the experience through the body sense of that object, and the experience through the body sense is accompanied by unpleasant feeling, which we call unpleasant bodily feeling, because it's through the body sense, so that object is felt. But the citta which experiences that tangible object, the hardness or the temperature, and the feeling which accompanies it, and all the other mental factors, are all namas, even though we call it bodily experience or bodily feeling.
Okay, thank you.
Just to elaborate on what was transferred, these are all these bodily sensations, right?
The feelings are all namas.
What are namas?
So there are two different kinds of realities, namas and rupas. So namas are the dharmas which can experience an object. So the moment of seeing, the moment of hearing, the moment of like, the moment of dislike, they all have objects that are experienced, the sound, the visible object, the concept about tea or table. And then there are the rupas, those dharmas which cannot experience anything, the sound, the visible object, the hardness, the temperature, these are rupas that can't experience anything. So this is all there is in reality, namas and rupas. No being, no thing, nothing else, just those dharmas which can experience objects and those dharmas which cannot experience anything.
And can there be the understanding of what we call nama right now? Not just only words or intellectual understanding. For example now, there is seeing, right? And that which is seen is not that which sees. And that which is seen cannot experience anything. And that which sees is seeing that which is seen. That which can see is different from that which is seen. So there are two kinds of realities, that which can experience and that which cannot experience anything. At moment of touching, hardness is experienced by that which is now experiencing it. Two different things, two different kinds of realities. Anytime. Yesterday, today, tomorrow, what is seen is that which can be seen only. And the seeing cannot do anything, just arise and cease. A reality which is not self, that which can experience anything is what is called nama. But we don't have to name or call it at moment of seeing. But there can be the development of understanding, one of the two, depending on conditions. What about the other world, the same or different? Wherever, the moon, the sun, the stars, realities? Which kind of reality? What we call sun or moon? What kind of reality? That which we call the sun or the moon.
That's a question.
There
are only two, that which can experience and that which cannot experience.
The same answer, wherever one is, whatever one's talking about, just the namas and the rupas, those realities which can experience and those which cannot experience anything. So, anywhere, anytime, same answer.
Any world. Or what we call table. What reality is it?
Well, I'm going for understanding, not too in here, but...
Okay, if you don't use any term like nama and rupa, we just talk about whatever appears now. Okay, there must be something of that which is seen for sure, because now there is seeing, right? When we talk about seeing, there must be that which seeing sees, right? How can there be seeing if it does not see anything? So at this moment there is seeing, and there is that which is seen by seeing, right? Or there is only seeing without that which is seen?
It must be a semantic aspect of this.
Hearing hears sound, so what does seeing see?
If we don't use any word at all, it's still that which is now seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
If I don't use any word,
there is that
I'm
which is
moving out of my head with my eyes, I'm seeing objects.
Or just open your eyes,
yes.
They're seeing already.
Yes.
So there must be something which is seen by the seeing. Anytime seeing arises, it sees that which can be seen only.
And then there's sound and non-visible.
Not yet. Just seeing and that which is seen by seeing, right?
Yeah.
And they are different because that which is seen cannot see at all.
Explain that, please.
That which is now seen cannot see anything.
With different words?
Hearing is sound. But can the sound itself hear?
This is the one hand clapping.
I see. Distinguishing two types of realities. One is mental, the other physical.
What about hardness? It's now appearing, right? Hardness. Mm-hmm. When there is touching only. If there is no touching, can hardness appear?
No.
No. And can hardness experience anything?
Hardness is a concept. No.
The characteristic which is hard mm-hmm. is experienced now. Can hardness experience anything? Or it just can be.
Hardness is a quality of texture.
No, no, we don't talk about any term anywhere, just that which is hard.
Like you're holding that microphone.
Yeah.
Okay,
so yeah. Where the contact with the microphone is, mm-hmm. there is hardness, right? Mm-hmm. So Ajahn's question is, that hardness that is being experienced, mm-hmm. can that hardness experience anything, or is it just a kind of reality that can be the object of experience?
Okay, when it comes to experiencing, there's the experiencer, me, who's holding the object, and I feel it hard or not. Mm. No?
We're talking about the difference between mental and physical reality. The mental realities, when they arise, they must experience something, an object. Without the object, there can't be the experience. So it's not like someone has experienced something. We're talking about seeing as one kind of experience, hearing as another kind of experience. Now, the question is, when seeing arises, it must experience something. And what is that something? We call it visible object or color. So the question from that is, seeing experiences, does the visible object experience?
One more time, the question is?
Seeing
the object.
Or the object, which is visible object. Does
the action of seeing.
Yeah, the action of seeing is to see, to see something. That something is called visible object. Let's use color.
Sure.
Color. Now, seeing sees color. Does color also experience something? Because seeing is an experience. Seeing is an experience, right? And color is the object of that experience. So the question, does color also experience?
Color itself experiences me seeing it?
Or experience anything.
I doubt it.